Welcome to All Road 65 Max Radio, where the road ahead gets brighter as we journey towards truth, traveling through our dreams and an inspiration into a new reality. It's time, and your ticket is waiting. All Roads Lead 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson.
Greetings. Thank you for joining me on BBS Radio, All Road 65 Max. I am your host, Pamela L. Henderson. My focus is my mission statement, to help create a quality of life through social growth, inspiring jewels to become leaders by establishing partnerships with entrepreneurs, corporations, donors, sponsors, volunteers, the community, and abroad. Please join me every other Tuesday at noon on BBS Radio. My special guest today is Miss Julia Arndt. Julia says, in today's fast-paced corporate world, together, burnout and stress are rampant. Companies are struggling to maintain high productivity while ensuring their employees' well-being. Imagine a solution that not only combats burnout, but also boosts productivity and leadership skills simultaneously. Julia is a renowned burnout prevention and corporate expert who has successfully trained over 10,000 high achievers at top innovative companies, including Google, Meta, and Microsoft. At last, I want to say thank you again, Julia, and welcome to the show.
I am so excited to be here today. Thank you so much for having me, Pamela. What a wonderful introduction.
Well, you're so welcome. You are so deserving of that. So how is the weather out there? And where are you located?
I am located in Lake Tahoe, California, in the mountains. Okay. It's a beautiful blue skies this morning. It's about, I think, 65 degrees outside. It's still crisp and warm for this time of the year. And we're excited and obviously grateful for every sunny day that we have out here.
You said 65 degrees, right?
Uh-huh.
For me, that is cold. That is literally cold. But you're in Tahoe, so yes, you would think that's a little hot. That's a little warm for you, right?
For us, it is pretty warm, right? For us, like, the highs in the summer are 80. So 65 is pretty nice still.
Oh, okay. Okay. That sounds good. Well, I'm in California, in this little city called Antioch Brentwood. Uh-huh. And right now we've been just now getting out of the hundreds, the triple digits. We're about 80, 85 still. But I can feel the weather is about to change. This is October, so we're getting ready to get cold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that your favorite time of the year, or do you like it hot as well?
I like it when it's hot. Yeah. I like it when it's 102 and I can have on my shorts and be so relaxed. And sometimes I like to play tennis and, you know, or work out, do yoga in the park or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Nice.
But it's okay. I've been reading about you and I have so many questions, right?
Oh, well, I'm so excited to answer any questions you might have.
I do. You are a very inspiring woman. But I always ask this first question, and please tell me about your personal experience that led you to become who you are today.
Okay. I always start with this because I think people hear my voice and they hear me speak and they always wonder where I'm from. So I always start by saying that I'm originally from Germany. That's why I have an accent.
Okay, yes.
And I've lived in 5 different countries over the last 16 years. And I've had a lot of different experiences with different cultures and languages. And I'm really passionate about that. But my actual experience that led me to who I am today and what I am doing today is I have worked at Google for 7.5 years, both in Europe and in the US. That's how I came to the US 10 years ago. And I experienced burnout after 7 years in my job. I was a global project lead and I was overseeing a big project across three different continents, multiple different time zones, over 60 stakeholders. And at the same time, I was commuting between San Francisco and Tahoe on a weekend basis. So I drove about 500 miles
Wow.
every weekend to be here in the mountains. And I started to ask myself a lot of questions as well around what do I want to do? I was trying to actually work remotely, which was really funny because in 2020 everything went remote, but that
Right.
was too late for me because at that point I had already experienced my burnout. But there were a couple of different things that basically led me to experiencing burnout, and it was really surprising to me because I was always a person actually that considered herself being a pretty active and healthy and self-aware person. My colleagues knew me by, the person that always went to the gym after work and that was always making healthy food choices. And so it really hit me, honestly, with a lot of surprise, when I was diagnosed with burnout. And so I went on this journey to discover and understand what had happened to me. I felt very lonely at the time and just very sad and alone, honestly, because I felt like nobody at work was really talking about burnout. So I felt like I was the only one. And I asked myself, how did I get here? And so, yeah, so I went on this journey to really dive into mental health, dive into what leads to burnout, dive into what can I do in order to overcome burnout. And after my own journey, which is still not complete, right? I feel like this is a lifelong journey for me. But after a couple of months, I learned a lot of things and I went back to work and I offered a internal stress management training because I felt so alone during that time that I wanted to make sure that other people wouldn't feel like that. And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to offer the stress management training, see if anyone wants to join. And over the course of 2 or 3 days, I had over 300 people that reached out to me
Wow.
and shared with me that they have experienced similar things and that they would love to hear from me what I have gone through and what I have learned along the way. And that was kind of my inspiration to reach more people because I told myself, well, if this is a problem at Google, it's certainly also a problem at other companies, at other tech companies and other industries. And so I decided to go on my own and start this company.
Great. Oh, wow. I tell you, because like I said, I do my little research much as I can. And I was reading about you and I was like, wow, Julia, this is me. And what I mean by that is that you wear a lot of hats and you did a lot of different things. And I said to myself, I think I was one of those people too. I had gotten burned out. I had gotten so exhausted within. I just was getting too emotional and not understanding why. And then certain tasks that I needed to complete, I was completing in a slow pace and didn't understand why. But reading your information and a lot that you had to say, I said to myself, you know what? I was burnt out. I was burnt out literally and didn't even recognize it. So thank you for sharing that. That is, we need that, Julia. We do. So my next question is, why do high achievers such as myself it's motivated of externals and work ourselves to the ground instead of developing our superpower. So I thought that was interesting reading about the superpower that you said. So can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would love to share a little bit about my own story to make this maybe a little bit more visual. And
Okay.
I hope that for the listeners, that's something that people can relate to as well. But I think, my journey really started when I was 10 years old. I had just transitioned from elementary school to high school, and I started to get what was for me bad grades. In elementary school, I was a straight A grade student, and then in middle school, I started to get B's, C's, and D's. And I had a sister who's 2 years older than me, and she was a straight A grade student without putting in any effort. And it was really frustrating to me, even though my parents never put any pressure on me. And so, this continued on for about a year, and I decided I'm going to change something about that. So I started to come home from school, sit down, copy all of my notes meticulously again, study everything that I had learned in school. And the results were super clear. I started, all of a sudden, my B's and C's and D's turned into A's across the board, which was great. And I was really happy about that. But what also happened was that my dad started to praise me for my accomplishments. And he told me that he was so proud of me and that he saw that I put in so much hard work and that I learned so many important tools for my life because of the hard work and discipline that I developed during those years. And that felt really good to me. And so I think this was the time actually when I started to learn that hard work pays off and that this external recognition feels really good, right? Like I was striving to get this love and recognition from my dad on a regular basis because he was usually not a person that would constantly, tell me how much he loved me or how proud he was of me. And so that was a very effective way for me to receive love from my dad. And that turned into being a straight A grade student, graduating from high school, but also in college. And as I started to work in the at Google and go into kind of my professional career, it continued to be the same, but it was just different outside external validations, right? From getting good grades, now it was getting positive performance evaluations from my manager and hearing from my manager that I was doing a good job. And obviously trying to strive to get to the next promotion and get to the next salary increase and all of these different things. So I think my child brain learned that this external recognition and validation felt good. And then that's what I was always looking for as a high achiever, right? I was always looking for that external validation to make me feel good about myself. And one of the biggest things I had to learn over the last couple of years since my burnout and since becoming more aware of this pattern was that I don't need this external validation and recognition. I can actually give it to myself.
Right. Absolutely. I absolutely agree. In your opinion, are high achievers insecure with self-compassion?
I think they often lack self-compassion, but I think it's something that they can learn. I do believe that a lot of high achievers are insecure at their core without maybe want like without realizing it or without wanting to assume that that's what it is.
Give
But
me
I
an
think there's,
example.
yeah, I think for example about imposter syndrome. I think a lot of high achievers actually question their abilities constantly. They constantly question why they are where they are, right? Like for example, me, again, I'm just giving a personal example to maybe showcase and paint the picture a bit more clearly. But when I started to work at Google, I had been the top performing graduate in high school, in college. I had like incredible internships. I spoke 3 languages fluently. And I started to work at Google, and all of a sudden, I was one of many high achievers and very, highly skilled professionals. And I asked myself, what am I doing here? Like, there's people that speak 6 languages, and there are people that have done these incredible internships at these consulting companies. And, all of a sudden, you're really questioning your abilities. And I think as a high achiever, because you are so ambitious and disciplined, you always strive for more. There's always this next thing, there's always this like moving target. And so there's a lot of insecurities that come with that as well. And I think that's why I do believe that at the core, a lot of high achievers experience insecurities. I think at the core, and we know that from research and a lot of studies, a lot of high achievers actually experience imposter syndrome. It's actually very, very common, especially in the as you are getting promoted and as you're taking on more responsibilities, because people then wonder, like now I have this much more responsibility. Am I capable to actually hold that pressure? and stand that pressure. And I think there was something else I wanted to say, but yeah, I think there, oh, the self-compassion piece. And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, do actually not practice self-compassion and take time to pause and celebrate their accomplishments and celebrate their
Absolutely.
wins, and thinking about, hey, I've actually gotten this far. They just, there's always this next thing that they're looking for to get again this like final, this external recognition. It's this like, hamster wheel of when I do this thing, then I'm gonna be happy, or when I achieve this thing, then I feel accomplished. But it never actually happens. We never
Right.
get there because there's
Absolutely.
always something else that we're striving for.
Great point. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Julia, you said high achievers are not educated or recognizing what burnout actually is and what to do about it. Explain about that.
Yeah. So through my work that I have been doing over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of big realizations in terms of what do we actually need in order to sustain our performance over time. And I developed what I call the peak performance method today, which is a systematically structured approach that's also research backed. So I actually ran research on it. And if people that are listening are interested and curious to learn more about that, I actually just did a TEDx talk on this particular subject. The TEDx talk is called "Is Your Drive to Succeed Holding You Back?" And so, yeah, so and the reason why I think we are not equipped as high achievers generally, and not just as high achievers, I think just as professionals in the workplace, because I do have a lot of people that I talk to that tell me I don't even feel like I am a high achiever, because again, I think that reflects this like insecurity and this idea of I don't even know if I am as good as maybe the outside world perceives me. But we really haven't learned what burnout is. And we haven't really learned what tools we can actually apply in order to sustain our performance over time. And I would love to share a little bit more about those specific tools. The peak performance method itself has nine different components that I have identified as the major areas that professionals should develop if they want to sustain their performance over time. But to kind of summarize those nine modules, I'm going to break it down into five different pieces. Number one, I think one of the reasons why a lot of professionals burn out, and I have seen that over and over again, right, from working with over 10,000 professionals over the last 6 years, is that we don't know how to prioritize our time. We don't know how to manage our calendar, how to set boundaries and say no. And because of that, we are constantly in this reactive mode. So we're constantly responding to other people's requests without actually paying attention to what we need in order to feel accomplished at the end of the workday. And because of that, then we work until late at night and during the weekends to actually get our work done. And I think there's honestly, Pamela, there's such a strong culture nowadays in the corporate world where that is just kind of perceived as the new normal and everyone just works this way. But I think that it's so wrong. And it really doesn't have to be this way. And I think myself and my clients have proved over and over again that when you are having the right tools, you can work 9 to 5, be incredibly productive during that time, and create that space for yourself to actually invest in your own well-being. So when you think about it, Pamela, when you work all day, what is the first thing that you cut out of your calendar when things are stressful and overwhelming?
Going out, leaving, and going to work out.
Yes,
This is
exactly.
me going, not working out. Actually, just some me time. Just some me time, honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're not the only one. Like, we all do this. As soon as things get busy, we just eliminate our me time because that's the easiest time to cut out without impacting anyone else. But
Absolutely.
that's the thing we actually need in order to refuel ourselves and re-energize our resources, because our brain wasn't designed to think 24/7. And so that's been honestly a super interesting discovery for myself on my own journey, because when I first burned out and started to look at all these different tools and learn about, and at the time I had actually already done yoga on a regular basis and gone into meditation and had all these different stress management tools, but it didn't actually address the root cause of my problem. I would go back to work, run from meeting to meeting, answer emails in
Right.
between, trying to please everyone, and then do my core work at night in order to get my projects done. So it was a really big discovery for me when I started to work with other people to see over and over again, well, the actual problem that we have is that we don't know how to manage our time. We don't know that it's actually important to prioritize and say no to people because it's so much easier to say yes, right? So all of these different things are part of the peak performance method, and in my opinion, are the most important tools to actually start to develop sustainable habits, and develop tools in order to help us overcome burnout. I think it has actually a lot to do with prioritization, time management, and setting boundaries.
I do agree. I know we discussed this a little bit earlier, and you may have even, made some points about this, but I'm going to ask again because I want clarity. Why do you think a systematic approach combining leadership tools, productivity, and mindfulness for success is the key to success?
It's really about that meditation and yoga or stress management techniques alone won't cure your burnout because it doesn't address the root cause of the problem, right? It might help us feel better in the moment, which is why it is still part of the Peak Performance Method program. I still do believe that it's really important for everyone to understand how our brains and our very sensitive nervous systems react to stress and how we can help it come back into balance. But when we don't address the root cause of our problem, which are what I just said, right? Time management, prioritization, setting boundaries, then we can, we can do as much yoga as we want. We're going to go back to work and we're still going to go back into that hamster wheel. So there is mindfulness practices and self-care part of the peak performance method, but there is also a big part around just kind of these workplace productivity tools. And then finally, from a leadership perspective, the way of how I think about leadership is resilience, mindset, and emotional intelligence. And it's actually really interesting when you look at the research and studies of how emotional intelligence actually impacts performance, and is one of the main drivers of performance when you are in emotionally intelligent. That's why, when we're looking at leaders, and I think the most successful leaders are actually very high in EQ, because not only do they understand themselves and they have invested in their own growth and development, but they're able to recognize it in others and support others in achieving the same. And I think you only get to do that when you invest in yourself and you start to develop these habits and
Habits.
skills on your own first.
Absolutely. I do agree. Julia, statistics state that many high achievers have perfectionistic tendencies, right? Striving for flawless performance in every aspect of their lives. In your opinion, do you think this is a true statement and why?
Yes, I'm myself a recovering perfectionist. I think perfectionism, leads to unfortunately a lot of problems. Definitely it can lead to burnout. I think it leads in many cases for people also to procrastination. Because they might feel like they are not equipped or ready to tackle a big project, and so they kind of push it along in front of them until they have a specific deadline, maybe. But yes, I do believe that high achievers do oftentimes suffer from perfectionism, and it is a big reason why people burn out. Because if you think about it as well, if you're a perfectionist and you're working on a project, that could potentially be done in about 2 hours, right? It might not be perfect, but it might be 95% there. But then you push it around, you keep kind of pushing it in front of you, to get it to 100%, but that those 5% might take you 8 hours, between 7 hours of thinking about it and then 1 hour of actually taking action. So yeah, so I do think that perfectionism is leading to burnout as well, can lead to burnout.
Also, in your opinion, how do you rewire the brain and use stress to your advantage?
Yeah, I already just mentioned the brain in terms of, I think it's really important to understand how the brain functions. Very, very basic brain fundamentals. We have two important parts of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, which is the frontal part of the brain. And that is, from an evolutionary perspective, the most recently developed part of the brain, even though it's millions of years old. And also, it's the part of the brain that actually differentiates us from the animal kingdom, because this part of the brain helps us to think about ourselves. Like it helps us to think and reflect on our own behaviors. But also, the prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain that helps us be productive at work, on a day-to-day basis. So it helps us to
Okay.
execute, to plan, to and you know to anticipate tasks, all of these different things. What's really important to know about the prefrontal cortex is that it has very limited capacity, and it requires a lot of energy to function, which is actually the reason why we need, right? We all know on a high theoretical level that we should take breaks during the day, but we don't really know why, I think, most of the time. And it's actually because the prefrontal cortex has never been designed to think and execute and plan 24/7. It
Right.
actually requires a lot of brain energy in order to do that. And so that's the prefrontal cortex, just to kind of have that part. And then the other very important part of our brain is the old brain. And part of the old, one of the parts of the old brain is the so-called amygdala. And the amygdala is our fear or stress center. And it is that part of the brain that's actually scanning our environments for threats at all times and alerts us immediately when something in our external environment is changing and is different to what we have done before. And so when we have been working all day without taking a break, our prefrontal cortex actually goes offline. It doesn't have the capacity anymore to, like I said, it wasn't designed to be that way. It depletes a lot of energy. That's also why, for example, when we study or when we work, we feel very hungry very quickly, because we are actually using a lot of energy. But at some point, let's say you work for 5 hours nonstop, your prefrontal cortex is absolutely completely depleted and your amygdala is taking over, because the prefrontal cortex also is designed to, it's also called kind of the braking system of our amygdala. So the prefrontal cortex is actually the part of the brain that makes rational, logical decisions to say, is this actually a threat or is it not? But if it's turned off because we've been working all day and we have a lot of high stress in our bodies, our amygdala is taking over. And now, all of a sudden, everything seems so much more threatening. That's why when you see people that suffer and that experience very high stress are oftentimes angry. They are very short-fused. They are on edge all the time
Right.
because their prefrontal cortex is completely offline and the amygdala is constantly just like, here's another threat, here's another threat, here's another thing that's going on, here's another thing. So it's really, that's why I'm saying it's so important to understand just these two parts of the brain and how they are related to each other. Because when you understand that, well, then hopefully, now you understand better, okay, I actually do need to give my prefrontal cortex a break for so many different reasons, right? In order to make sure that I'm productive and that I am focused. Because we think, well, I just, right, our old belief system is, if I work 10 hours, I get 10 hours of work done. If I work 14 hours, I get 14 hours of work done. But it's actually not the truth, right? We
Right.
know that if I work so many hours, I probably just get effectively 6 hours of work done, and the other 4 hours I'm just kind of distracted and I don't just actually do my work the as well as I could be doing it, and I'm probably also make mistakes along the way. And so that's why the prefrontal cortex needs breaks, and it actually helps us to when we are taking these breaks to balance our nervous systems, because when we are in this amygdala high stress state, we are in the sympathetic nervous system state. That, you know, I'm throwing around a lot of words here right now.
Right,
But I
right.
think the easy thing to remember is we need to balance those two systems. We need to give the prefrontal cortex a break in order to replenish itself. And we need to help. And with that, when we do that, we actually help our nervous system to rebalance itself too, and go from this sympathetic nervous system state that we all know of and that we've all heard of because it's the fight or flight system, to balancing it to our counterpart of our nervous system, which is the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's also called the rest and digest, or the growth and repair system, because in that part of the when we are rebalanced, it helps our body to send the signal of we are actually in a safe space, everything is okay, and all of the mo main bodily functions can go back to normal functionality. And when we don't do that, when we are constantly in high fight or flight, that's when a lot of people get sick, and that's when burnout leads to both physical and mental signals that we are actually burned out, from anxiety to depression, panic attacks to migraines, digestive issues, high blood pressure issues. All of these different things are actually related to high stress. And we know, Pamela, today, which is insane, that 90%, 90 of all doctor visits are stress related, because
Yes.
we haven't
Yes.
learned how to manage stress and how to address stress, and how actually by very simple techniques we can bring our very sensitive nervous systems again into balance.
I do agree. Thank you for sharing about that.
Yeah.
You stated that personal habits are often the hidden culprits of burnout. And I know I'm asking you some of these questions and maybe going over some because you're helping me right now for me
Great.
to understand. I need to be taking more 10-minute breaks so I can re-energize, regroup.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like I'm just running all over the office and with paperwork in my hand and, the phone ready and talking to employees or even with the girls that I mentor, giving myself time to relax so I can work professionally and feel good about what the accomplishments are today. So thank you for sharing that.
Okay, I can
So
share, if it's helpful for the listeners, one of really powerful exercise to do when you think about kind of your personal habits being these like hidden culprits of burnout. It's a very powerful exercise that I love to do. And I invite you to just sit down for a moment, or even you can do this exercise in your head. And I want you to think about what are the first five things you do when you wake up in the morning.
Okay.
And most of you, well, let's do this. Are you open to doing it together, Pamela?
Yes, why not?
All right, let's do it. What are the
Hey.
first five things you do when you wake up? So, like, take me really step by step through, is the first thing you do looking at your phone? Like, what are the first five things you do in the morning?
Okay. So when I first wake up, of course, I go to the bathroom and I come back, I look at my phone. Check my emails, see if I have anything interesting, any cancellations, all of that. And I pray. I take time out to pray before I start my day.
I
So
love
I
that.
know I'm going to have a fabulous day, no matter what trials or, challenges I face. And then after that, I turn on my music. I have to have a little music. I love music. So I have to have a little music while I get dressed and everything. So after I do that, I drink my tea and then I sit down with a people. You know what? Then I always do, I sit down and start thinking about everything I have to do that I had written down the night before. And then I sit there and I say, okay, well, let's get the quickest things out the way first. And then I deal with the things that are a little that need more time. And that's
Okay.
what I
Amazing. Yeah, those are already some really great habits and tools that you have. When you think about this, so if we summarize, I'm going to summarize it quickly, right? So you get up, you go to the bathroom, you come back, you check your phone, you look at maybe emails and things that are interesting that happened overnight. And then you pray, turn on your music, get dressed, drink your tea, and then kind of look at your priority list. So there's already a couple of really good habits in there. If you think
Good.
about it, I love that. I love the praying. I love the, taking time for yourself to like music and getting dressed, doing something that you love to do. If there's one thing, when you think about your morning routine, that you feel like is actually not maybe helping you, what would it be? Or what
My
is something
list,
that, yeah, sorry.
of my to-do list, because
Is
I feel
missing
now,
or, yeah.
huh?
Is it missing or what about the to-do list?
Well, my to-do list is because when you have a to-do list, you'll end up getting burnt out because that your to-do list throughout the day, it doesn't go away.
Just gets
Things are
bigger and
added.
longer.
Things are added. And so then you find yourself trying to accomplish the list and the things that added on. So I come to the conclusion that I'd rather just get up, go to work, and deal with my day, knowing that my routine of the things that I need to do are being done, but everything else will fall into place. How about
Okay.
that?
Yes and no. Let's
Okay.
talk a little bit about it,
Okay.
because what you're describing to me right now is more of this reactive workday, right? You're like, okay, I do have a to-do list, but I feel like there's just so many more things that are added on over the course of the day. So maybe I just don't do a to-do list in the first place. I actually do think, and that's something that I teach every single person that I'm meeting, is that it's really, really important to sit down in the morning. So I love that you're already having that habit, Pamela. And you think about not you, what you're doing is you think about all the to-dos, but I want you to think about what are the top 2 to 3 priorities for
Okay.
that day that absolutely need to happen that day. Because I also have a to-do list, right, of like always like 15 different things that need to be done over the course of maybe the week. But it's not actually the most important thing. So when you really take, and it takes 2 minutes to do this, and it's so powerful. But when you take this moment to really be like, okay, what is it that actually needs to happen today that makes me close my laptop at 5 o'clock in the evening and I walk away from work and I feel like I've actually done the thing? Because that's the other thing about to-do lists, right? We never feel done. We never feel accomplished at the end of the day because there's always more that adds on, which is why it's so important to develop this skill and habit of prioritization. And when you do that, I promise you're going to feel differently at the end of the workday.
Okay, I had
Yeah.
written that down. I am going to try that
Great. I love that.
starting tomorrow.
Okay. And so, for the listeners, again, with regards to this exercise that I just explained and that Pamela helped me kind of walk you through, just to kind of wrap it up. So, you take some time to think about what are the things that you're doing in the morning? What are the 5 first things? And Pamela already has an incredible morning routine, actually. I would question if it is necessary to look at your phone. Maybe you can do that after all of the other things, right? Maybe you that's kind of what I was getting at with my question earlier. Maybe, and some people say they need to look at their phone just to kind of decrease their anxiety. For me, it was always something that absolutely increased my anxiety at the beginning of the day because there was just so much stuff that I saw that immediately put me in this work mode and ma not made me enjoy my first 10, 15, 30 minutes of the day. So look at your morning routine. Ask yourself, what are actually the routines that support you to feel like the best version of yourself? And what are the routines that you could potentially just reshuffle a little bit so you are really creating first that space for yourself before you're giving your energy away to everyone else, right? And I know, and we probably have a lot of listeners that are listening as well that say, well, but I have kids and I have to take care of other people. Maybe, you know, you're making breakfast for your kids, bring them to school, or maybe you're helping your husband, you know, get ready by making breakfast, whatever it is. And then we use this as a reason to be like, well, then I don't have time for myself. And I challenge you that there's always time. Even if the only thing that you do for yourself in the morning is to consciously make yourself a tea, a coffee, a water, whatever, and drink that and have a moment of self-care, even just in a minute. And I have, you know, I work a lot with parents actually, and these really small mindful moments make all the difference, because instead of just this like hassle, 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 there is actually this moment of I've actually done something for myself already this in the morning. And then there's nothing to be said about as well that once you have maybe dropped off your kids at school and your husband is at work and you're getting to work, that you can't take 5 minutes then to, again, instead of just jumping in and being reactive and feeling already like your stress levels are like, you know, at 150 when you get to work, to take 5 minutes and be like, okay, what do I need 5 minutes? I make myself a tea, I eat something, and I sit down, and before I look even into my inbox, I just think about the 2 to 3 things that are actually so important for me to do today. And then the next step would be to look into your calendar and kind of manage your time around that and set boundaries, right? It's all connected. That's why it's a systematic approach. But I think the morning routine actually says a lot about how you are managing your energy. So I think it's a really powerful first step to look at, to shift those personal habits from maybe the hidden culprits of burnout to the things that can support you already in the morning to set yourself up for success.
Yes. You know, I was on your website and I was looking and reading about you, Julia. And I must say, you are a true servant, a leader who lives by her life motto. And that's very impressive, because we have a lot of people or entrepreneurs who take on certain jobs and want to give back, but they don't really put in what's really needed. It's like making a difference. And I must say, always willing to serve. And it just appears that is who you are. In your opinion, what makes a great mentor? And how do you create within someone to promote personal growth and enlightenment? Because that is something that is important to me. What is your opinion about that?
Wonderful question. Well, first of all, what's important in a mentor? I think it's to lead by example, just kind of what you just said, right? Like, I think pick the people where you feel like this is who I want to be. This is how I want to show up, you know? And I have this conversation actually quite often where I say to people, well, think of a leader at your workplace that is already doing the things that you're striving to develop in your own life. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, sometimes, especially when it comes to work-life balance and well-being, we might not have that role model. But I think, you know, sometimes we think kind of in this like narrow mindset of, well, I don't have anyone in my close vicinity that is like that. When I started to learn about personal development and I started to invest in my growth, I was listening to a podcast. It was actually a German podcast. So unfortunately, you know, for the American listeners today, I'm not really able to recommend it because it's German. But I was listening to her every week, and she's so inspired. She was like my mentor, because I was really inspired not only by how she was leading life, but also how she started and grew her business to multiple seven figures. And so I think a mentor, when you're looking for a mentor, I think it's really important to look for somebody that has characteristics and capabilities that you strive to develop in your own life. And then ask them, obviously, for if they're open to take on mentors. You know, There's something to be. I have a personal opinion about this, and people might not agree with me on this, but I do believe, mentorship is an interesting thing, and it can work so wonderfully if you find the right person that really takes time to really mentor you. But I think in today's world where everything is so busy and everyone wants your attention all the time, I do actually believe that mentorship is not working so well anymore because, like, think about if you meet with your mentor once a month and you talk maybe for an hour, it doesn't have oftentimes the same effect as if you work with somebody that you honestly hire and that you pay for dedicating
Ongoing.
that time to you.
Absolutely.
And so there's something to be said about really investing in your personal development and finding someone, it can be a coach or let's just like talk a coach. Like it can be a coach that really helps you to get to that certain level because oftentimes mentorship, in my opinion, is unfortunately too superficial these days to actually really learn and develop certain habits and routines.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for answering that. So tell me about the Stressed podcast.
The Stressed Podcast. Well, I started the podcast in 2019, again, as kind of this like inspiration to help more people because I was listening to this German podcast and it had helped me so much. So I wanted to start to become this thought leader in the stress management well-being space that also put out my ideas and learnings that I had along the way of in my own journey. The Stress Podcast actually has been taking a break over the last year, but I have over 250 podcast episodes that were recorded between 2019 and 2023. And there's different podcast episode formats. There are episodes where I just talk about my own experience and different learnings and specific tools. And there are many very fascinating interviews that I held with industry leaders, doctors, psychologists, coaches, consultants, from all across the globe, in order to help people also provide different perspectives and angles of how we can take care of ourselves.
Right. Well, also I was reading how, I mean, great you are as far as your approach of training and development, and has been proven to decrease, I mean, decrease, I'm sorry, decrease stress by 45%, depression by 71%, and boosting performance by 26%. All by investing just 1 hour a week, you say, in better habits, correct? And that is
Correct.
your bl and that is your blueprint, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Very good. Very good. I will give you a star for that because I thought that was phenomenal, me myself.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, we ran a study. I think that's kind of my research brain. I have a master's degree in brand management and marketing. We did a lot of statistics during that time, and I was always fascinated in data and actually supporting, things that you develop with data because obviously we all love data and it's just so much more powerful. So once I
Right.
created the peak performance method, I was really curious to see what would actually happen if people invest an hour per week in themselves in developing better habits and routines, and what kind of an effect it would have on their stress levels, their depression, anxiety, sleep quality, and performance improvements. And I ran this study with a researcher from BrainTap, which is a really fascinating performance-based application. They don't call themselves meditation app, which is very interesting. So if you've never heard about BrainTap, highly encourage you to check it out. And so BrainTap, the founder of BrainTap, Dr. Patrick Porter, he gave me his researcher and said, okay, we're going to do this research study and we're going to test two things. We're going to split our research test group into two different groups. One group that's going through the peak performance method week by week, without BrainTap, because BrainTap, what it basically does is you can imagine it just like a meditation, but it is designed in a way that talks to your left and right brain hemisphere. So there's different sounds and things that are happening in order to help you integrate the new learned tools and habits on a more subconscious level. Because we know that consciously we might understand certain things, but our habits and routines are oftentimes kind of locked down more subconsciously because of just the patterns we have developed, right? As I mentioned earlier, from the age of 10 years old. And so it's much, and that's why, right, habits are harder to break. So BrainTap basically helps to integrate it on a much deeper level in order to achieve long lasting results. And it was so fascinating, Pamela, because so we had these two groups and we used research-backed scales. So we used questionnaires on stress management, sleep quality, depression, and anxiety levels that were already validated in research and were able to show these incredible improvements over the course of 10 weeks when people just started to invest in all of the things that we talked about today, from stress management to developing these prioritization and boundaries and time management tools, and also more of these deeper things like looking at their limiting beliefs and building resilience and mindset. And so, yeah, thank you for like saying it, you know, thank you for sharing it. This is something I actually share in the TEDx talk as well, because it honestly blew my own mind what we found in this research. Because, you know, I truly believe, Pamela, no matter what you do, when you invest in yourself and when you start to develop better habits, it will always have a positive effect. You know, when you take an hour to reflect on yourself and to invest in yourself, it will always have a positive effect. But the numbers that we were able to show were just absolutely mind-blowing. So yeah, so if anyone is listening and they want to see more, we have there's a whole research paper on the effects of the peak performance method. But yeah, it was a really fascinating study.
Right. Yeah, it sounds like it too. So, you know, that's one thing that I try to advocate in the workplace is happy. Because, you know, when we got to work, we just like, we can't become robots where we're just doing everything repetitive and we just keep going and everything. But also for other management team, can you tell me how do or how can I recognize when someone needs help and how to understand the dynamics of seasonal depression? Because I do understand or I have noticed that like Christmas and the first of the year, everyone's happy, but around Thanksgiving, Veterans Day, sometimes people can become a little sad. So, what is your opinion about that? How
Yeah,
do
that's
you,
a
and
great
how would I?
help others as well.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's it.
Yeah, I think it's a great an observation. So a couple of things to that. First of all, I'm not a mental health professional, right? Like I'm a coach and a consultant. I just want to kind of give that that disclaimer for everything that I'm saying. I'm speaking more about my own experience. And you know, if people are
Absolutely.
experiencing anxiety or depression, it's always good to see a mental health professional. But from what I've seen and my experience is the following. Well, first of all, seasonal, I think you can see, you know, if it can be seasonal depression, because I actually believe that a lot of people around Christmas time can get really depressed because of kind of the tensions that are happening on a more personal level. So I think some people might actually experience seasonal depression during the Christmas period because of just kind of the personal dynamics that they have, or family dynamics that they have. And I think, you know, those should be usually pretty short in nature, right? So we're talking maybe a couple of weeks where we just don't feel as motivated or where we feel a little bit more depressed. Burnout is interesting because, again, from my own experience and working with so many people, burnout is something that doesn't happen from one day to another. It's kind of this like slow
Ongoing.
thing, ongoing thing. And there are different signs that can show us as a manager, for example, and as a leader, that someone might feel very burned out. So I think, there's always something to be said about sitting down with that person and getting a little curious around, hey, I've been noticing that you seem more sad, or like, I just wanted to check in with you and see if everything is okay. And they might already, they might either say, oh, and it always depends on the awareness level of that person, right? Of course, as well, of like, are they aware that
Right.
that's happening? Are they open to share it? It can be very vulnerable to share this with a colleague or with a leader at work. But you can get curious and you can always try to have that conversation. But yeah, signs of burnout are interesting, and there might be some signs that are actually similar to depression, because the brain works in similar ways in that way, right? Where people might be super on edge all the time and like, kind of snap at things. And maybe you've worked with this person for a couple of years and you've never seen them react this way. So, it can always be something to get curious about. But Pamela, unfortunately, I do really believe that you can't really help someone unless they want to. Unless they come to you and they say, I would love your support. Can we talk about this? When people are burned out and they don't know that they're burned out, you can't really help them. And that's sometimes really hard to observe as a friend or family member or as a leader or colleague. But people need to have their own self-awareness, and their willingness to change.
Okay.
And if they don't like, and you can seek a conversation and see if they are open to it. And then you can obviously have a conversation with them about it. But if they're not ready, they're not ready. And I think people are on their own journey, and we just need to trust that all we can do is, I think, be great role models, and focus on ourselves, because we really can't change other people. Unless they want help with it.
Well, me myself, I thought it was because, in the United States, we have to work 365 days a year.
Right.
And we have to work till we're 70. I say maybe everybody has that on their mind. So I made a little joke the other day and I said, well, maybe we need to write to Congress or the secretary or somebody just to let them know that, can you imagine working till you're 70 years old? And whatever happened to 55? I think 55 was a good time that you can retire and move forward, because when you're 70, now you're really going to be burnt out because, you're so used to working. And then when you do retire, you do come back to work, because sometimes if you're not well off or anything like that, just to travel and enjoy life, then it gets boring at home. And then you find yourself working for someone, and then you get burnt out during the process. So,
Yeah,
very good point. Very good point.
I think it's a powerful reminder that we need to enjoy life every day and not just wait until we're 70 years old, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree with you. Well, we're up for time. It has really been a pleasure having you on my show. Do you have any last minute comments you would like to say?
We talked about the podcast. One of the social media platforms that I invest very heavily in is Instagram. I show up there every day and I share, kind of try to share what I do every day to take care of myself and address, big, challenges and pain points of the people that I work with. So if you want to stop by and say hi, it's Peak Performance with Julia is my Instagram handle, and I would love to see you there if you're curious to learn more about the work that I do.
Absolutely. That sounds good. That was my next question. How can someone follow you and also your social media? So you just have your Instagram. Do you have anything else?
Instagram is the perfect place to start. I would just leave it at that.
Okay. That sounds good. Well, readers, I have reached my destination. And I leave you with this quote. The interesting thing about coaching is that you have to trouble the comfortable. And comfort the trouble. Rick Charlesworth. Until next time, thank you for joining me. See you in a week. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to All Roads 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson. Join us every other week on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio Station 1. And please visit allroads65max.org and become a volunteer or sponsor and be the change you want to see in this world. With your help, we can make a difference in our society and uplift those who so desperately need our help. Thank you for tuning in.